Broadcasting from the commodity capital of the world, Zurich, Switzerland, this is Insider's Guide to Energy.
This addition to Insider's Guide to Energy is brought to you by Fidectus. Go to www.fidectus.com for more information.
Welcome to Insider's Guide to Energy. I'm your host, Chris Sass. And today we have an exciting episode where we're talking to a couple of people from Hitachi. First, I have with me Brian Freehoff. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chris. Glad to be here.
Let me go ahead and introduce Phil Gruber as well with us.
Hey, Chris. Good to be here.
Welcome, guys. What I think makes sense, because I know who you are. Our audience has no clue, maybe. Brian, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Hi, so my name is Brian Freehoff. I work at Hitachi Energy and I lead the Enterprise Software Solutions portfolio, which is pretty much the software portfolio for Hitachi Energy. And I've been in industry working around the utility industry for about the last 30 years in different roles, different companies. And I'm very excited to be here today. And it looks like I'm filming from Bass Pro Shops, but it's not. It's just my office.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Looking forward to hearing a little bit about your experience and what you're seeing in the market. But before we go there, Phil, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Yeah. Hi, guys. I'm Phil Gruber. I lead the energy practice at Hitachi Vantara, which is the digital services business within Hitachi. I've also got a lot of experience in the utility industry and other asset-intensive industries.
Awesome. Well, welcome, both of you. So Brian, we were talking a little bit in our pre-show about some of the things you could help us with. And I think the topic that comes to mind to me is, how are folks managing linear assets and how are they really understanding what they have out in the field? What are you seeing? How do you see folks do that today?
Well, today, it's especially in the utility industry and other asset-intensive industries that have linear assets, a lot of it's done with a geospatial sort of background, right? That is the map is the eye to how everyone's used to looking up, whether it's a coffee shop, a grocery store, how to get to a park, or where their assets are located. So that geospatial reference is a strong way to identify and see those assets. And then how they're managing it, it's understanding that interconductivity between the assets. So if one thing goes down, what is impacted downstream? Stream of that, and leveraging a bunch of technologies more than just that digital transformation or digitalization of the workforce, adopting digital technologies, whether it's determining asset health, whether it's doing some inspections, leveraging drones or other data to gather that information and then analyze it. We're seeing a lot of those trends really pop up, and our customers then are saying, what do we do with all this data? How do we analyze it and turn it into actionable information and insights? That's really where we see our customers focus.
Wow, that was a mouthful. That was a lot. So let's break this down a little bit. What all this means for a utility or for an energy company or someone like that. Let's take an incremental set. So you talked about digitalization. You talked about geospatial. What kind of problems specifically are you looking to solve? Where are you going to bring them help? So let's start.
I think very specifically, there's a lot of data where people are trying to understand what is the health of the given assets and where are they located and what's the impact of a given outage. So one is the asset health, and there's a lot of different data that you can gather and that is being gathered today and can be analyzed to give real actionable, not just, hey, here's a data set, but actually what should I do with that information? What action should I take? That's one component. Visualizing it in a digital format on a geospatial basis is really important to then optimizing those activities and understanding what are all the different maintenance activities I can take if I have an outage. Let's stop there. See if that was too much.
No, I think I've got incrementally what you're saying. So I guess when you say you're having digital assets and actionable intelligence, right? So I think that's all about why people are doing digitalization. So are you creating another data lake? Are we putting this into a data strategy? Help me understand what that is.
So I think so Phil, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to interject. I mean, I think it is really hard to figure out what the starting point is. It's hard for our clients as well. And so, you know, a lot of times we'll just ask them, you know, what challenges are they having or what goals are they trying to accomplish, and focus maybe on a small piece, and a specific use case. So, you know, I think Brian did a good job of kind of talking about the macro view of what we're seeing in the industry with our clients, but maybe a couple of specific examples would help. So, for example, you know, what Brian talked about was it's hard for clients a lot of times to get actionable insights from the data that they have. A lot of our clients we're finding are capturing drone imagery of their transmission lines, and they're trying to understand and see, you know, where are there potential defects or issues in that infrastructure from looking at the imagery. But the amount of data that they have just in video is in some cases so overwhelming they can't even look at it all. You know, so they have this video imagery. They paid for the drones to capture it, and they may not even have time to look at it. If they do look at it, they have a human often doing the analysis and trying to find defects in video. You know, with somebody staring at a screen for hours at a time is kind of prone. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny. It's prone to error. So what we've done is developed a machine learning algorithm to look at that imagery and automate that process of identifying what they're seeing, what kind of asset it is, and then find defects in those assets.
All right. So one application that I'm hearing, just to make sure I understood it, is you'd have some sort of visual inspection. Maybe it's LiDAR, maybe it's photos, maybe it's some sort of inspection process that takes place. And rather than having a human try to interpret this too much data that would give you a brain meltdown, you're basically have the machine learning that's capable of understanding and maybe baselining an infrastructure for you and calling out trouble. You have some...
Absolutely. So you can, it's a really good point, Chris. You can baseline it. And see what's the status at a certain point in time, and then over time you can see the degradation because you'll have that that imagery and can make a comparison. You also made another good point. It's not just video. You know, it could be satellite, it could be LiDAR. We place cameras in substations to look at everything from physical security to finding hotspots within the substation. And indications of issues with equipment before we have real catastrophic problems. So lots of different data sources and lots of different applications.
And so, I think...
go ahead.
I was just going to interject there. I think that's also where, when you think about the use of this, you're able to identify some failure modes through that visual inspection. And so then that's where I was talking about the link into asset performance management, which is then holistically what is not only the way the asset's being operated, maybe that'll cause a failure mode, but maybe you're able to find some other failure mode with the thermography or LiDAR data or something else that represents a risk. And then it gives you a more holistic view of those assets that, because they're linear, are spread across the large geographic area. And it then eliminates a lot of the need for that individual to take a truck out there and do some sort of visual inspection, which, as Phil described, then is prone to human error, right? Because you can't see everything the way you're able to then get it with a high resolution imagery and then do the analysis on it.
So are you competing then with, like you said, a truck, someone climbing a pole, someone flying in a helicopter? Is that kind of how it's traditionally done today, or how is it handled today?
The way I like to think of it is not competing, but augmenting. So yeah, go ahead, Brian.
No, I was going to say it's augmenting, but it also doesn't compete, but it reduces the risk associated with some of the inspections, because you have people climbing these high voltage towers. There's an inherent risk there. So now we no longer have to do that. So there's a safety element to it. And then you're also able to cover more of those linear assets in a given period of time to get that inspection data than if you did it manually. So I wouldn't say it's competing, but it is augmenting.
So now you mentioned something interesting, and I don't know if this is where you go or not. So you get the visual inspection, and you've got kind of some data point there. Do you also tap any other database? So let's say, I don't know, we're looking at component. Do you have histories across your, do you have like a big data set that you're using to see performance and how my asset maybe stacks up against how it's supposed to or how competing assets would be doing?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing video analytics as sort of one data set, maybe an underutilized data set that we're trying to get more value from. But really good point. It's not the only data set. We might have, and Brian can speak about this more eloquently than I can, but from a asset performance management perspective, like Brian talked about, we'll have an asset model that will take all kinds of different data and determine health and longevity and other characteristics So we're seeing the video imagery and the application of machine learning models to get insights from that video or thermography or satellite images as just one additional data source to build out that model.
All right. So you get several data sources going in. What is the problem statement that made you go here? Why is it risk? Was it you were looking at de-risking some of the situation? Was it performance? Or what got Hitachi to go down this path? What kicked that off for you?
Not that guy.
Not the guy that walked into our room. So we are here live at a trade show. So there may be background noises here at the moment.
So I think what caused us to go down that is being a large OEM manufacturer of the assets that comprise and manage the grid. That was something we started to build, was what are the failure modes we're seeing and our customers need to have early notification on. And so it was building that asset performance management, which takes the legacy condition monitoring or the gathering a few little data sets. And how do I apply that to rotating, non-rotating assets so that you can take these different disparate data sources, because utilities have a ton of data, as Phil described. They've got a plethora of data. It's being able to then ingest it, take it from the siloed sources, and how does that then comprise to give you a true indication of the health of that asset? That's why we started the journey, and I think the latest addition that we have in the portfolio are the visual analytics, because as Phil said, there's a lot of that data that is used either for some very small discrete use cases, but it can be leveraged more across the enterprise to give you a better picture of what that asset health looks like. And so that's really what drove us there, was operational effectiveness and helping our customers do what they need to do, which is deliver affordable, reliable, dependable power to their customers.
And so that comes along to a couple things that come to mind when you describe that, right? I mean, I think back to the campfire and the history of how that started, or having lived in the DC area, Maryland, where we had a lot of old infrastructure and a lot of trees and things messing with the lines. And anytime we had a storm go through, there would be power outages, right? Just because of vegetation. So how do you think your customers or the industry should solve that? Is it through this kind of a solution that we're talking about, or what should the industry do?
Yes, I think you're seeing a big uptick in vegetation management solutions. And oddly enough, we're launching our own vegetation management solution that has machine learning as part of the algorithm, which will help forecast what kind of growth you're going to see based on the species of the trees, and satellite imagery to help confirm that, and then look at what you're seeing, not only from the growth perspective, but also if you've had a lot of years of growth and then you're in a drought period, which happens a lot in the Western United States. Now you've turned that growth into, you don't have to trim it, but now you have to mitigate it because it's a fuel source for fire. So I think those tools, just because the volume of data and the manual way of saying, well, we're going to trim this circuit this year and then that circuit next year, it's just not having the impact that is necessary with today's complex grid and the kind of demands that are on it. So we're seeing these tools very much being applied there. And that's also part of the portfolio that we're announcing this week, is that vegetation management solution.
Well, I was just going to add that for most transmission companies, tree trimming, vegetation management is the biggest part of their O&M budget. So, they're obviously looking to reduce O&M, prefer to have capital so they can put it back into their rate base. And this is by far, the biggest part of their budget. So how can they use that budget more effectively to get the outcomes that they need?
All right. So if I can predict and I have good visuals on my asset, I can check the vegetation. I can also take data, as you're saying, from what I'm hearing. So understand growth rates and other data sets in maybe weather patterns or things like that to either prioritize or de-risk where there's vegetation there.
Absolutely.
And so what I think you're saying is it's a large spend for utilities, and by being more efficient that they're just able to do the job better what I think I'm hearing you say.
Exactly. Like you said, do the job better and do it with potentially less resource, less cost.
All right. And so this is a new launch. So here we are at Distributech 2022. Sorry, I've been at a trade show for a couple of days. You just launched this solution. This is new for Hitachi?
This is new as of this week is our official launch.
But if it falls into a broader portfolio that we have, and I don't want to talk too much about our products, but I think it's really important if you think about it from a business perspective. It's not just, where do you need to do the tree trimming? It's how do you get a crew there? How do you route them? the next job? How do you keep track of the history of all of that work? So it's part of, you know, managing work, managing field force, managing assets. It's really part of that whole portfolio of we could say products, but for the utility company, it would be their business processes.
Right. So this is part of our field service management, as Phil described what we're doing, because it's a very important but a very distinct and dedicated group of field workers that are executing this work on a daily basis. So this is to help them optimize schedule. So it isn't just a recommendation of here's something you should trim, but it has the complete supporting that entire life cycle from here's where it should be done, here's the priority associated risk, and then here's the scheduling optimization components for those crews. So it's a complete to support that entire business process, just not more data for the utility than to have to digest, but it actually supports that entire activity.
All right. So I understand the kind of the life cycle that you just talked about and all the elements. I'm assuming that's a fairly manual process before this platform, or is it multiple small systems in your swivel chairing to be the integrator?
It could have been both. I mean, a lot of cases it was manual, and in some cases it was a little bit of a subset. Sometimes it was just calendar based. This is what we're going to trim this year. This is the next priority. So it was more calendar based type activity. But if you see with some of the climate change we've experienced, you've got more volatility in weather patterns. So you can have different precipitations even within, you know, a few miles of each other that you'd have different growth rates. And that's what this was really designed to help, is identify those areas where, even though you think under the traditional way you would have managed it, you shouldn't have an issue, but perhaps you do today. And as we talked about it, from optimizing the crew, it also then feeds back into the overall health score of a circuit, so that you can say, I've got a bigger risk on this circuit, and the failure mode could be vegetation management. So it's, again, bringing that together so the utility's not doing the swivel chair, as you will, not having to go through 10 different applications, but how do I bring that in to give you something that's more holistic view of here's the health of this circuit now and forecasted, and why would it be less than healthy, right? What is the failure mode? That it's could be operational, could be anything, could be vegetation, but that's what we're showing.
And then also, I think, you know, Brian talked about actionable insights. So it's not the next piece is then, well, what do you do about it? So you know, this is potentially going to be, and not just, you know, vegetation management, but that going back to the asset health, the asset condition, potentially either an issue that we identify or one that we think is going to occur in the future. So what's the next best action to take? That's another really important piece. It's one thing to know that there's potentially a problem, but it's a whole nother thing to know what you should do about that problem.
Right.
Okay. So utilities are looking to have some workflows or some actionable intelligence, as you said, but probably even more automation as well, right? Because mm-hmm. if you have machine learning capabilities, you ought to be able to figure out that, hey, the last 10 times this happened, this is how you solved it.
Right.
Pretty likely. Now, you may need to approve this, but sure. Pretty likely this is how you want to solve it the next 10 times.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where the trend is going? Is that what the industry is looking to do?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because you have – as we've heard from a lot of our customers, they have data overload. So what they don't need is more data. What they need is to have someone tell them this is what we should be doing, and only bring it to the attention when it requires human intervention. Like, you need to pay attention to this, and here's why, here's what the result could be. And then automate that process so that it's just an approval, not, I have a condition, what do I do about it? Let me go do the research myself. You want the systems to be able to give you that insight and intelligence based upon what you've done in the past or how you want to change, treat something in the future. So that's exactly what this is about.
And what kind of economic impact does it have to the business? So I get the risk part, I get the vegetation part. Let's look more about the workflows and the intelligence and things like that. What are they looking to do? Are they looking for operational savings? Are they looking for a business competitive advantage? I mean,
yeah, I think maybe we talked about a couple of different use cases. Maybe we'll bring up a third one. So we talked about transmission line inspection, and we talked about vegetation management. A third use of machine learning and video analytics, visual analytics, would be in the substation. We can go out to a substation. Take a 3D scan, you know, from an iPhone, just in a couple hours. Use a tool that we have to determine where to place cameras within the substation to make sure we have line of sight to the things that we want to be able to see, whether it's the perimeter or maybe a gauge that, you know, an analog gauge that we want to digitize essentially through the camera. If we want to use thermography or IR or other capabilities that cameras now have, you know, we can look at all of those things. So we place the cameras in the right place with, you know, addressing the right criteria. And then we can reduce the amount of times that the utilities actually need to go out and inspect that substation. So that's a, you know, what are the outcomes? Well, you
know, so it's an operational savings. So
less truck rolls, right. But it's also you know, better performance. If they're only going out to look at the substation once every 3 months, they may have an issue that they don't know about for 2 months, right? And so, you know, if we have these cameras in the substations, they find out, you know, in real time what the issues are.
Okay, you say they may have, and so just to kind of call you out a little bit.
Go ahead.
I mean, we've been getting power for a long time. My grid's kind of working, right? And you know, generally works most of the time very well. So what's the sudden switch that makes this important now that wasn't important a couple of years ago?
I mean, there's a lot of things I could talk about, Chris. I'll just pick one: aging workforce. So you know, there's not the same sort of intelligence that we have in the workforce about these assets, and so you know, the folks that have been managing these substations for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, they may know in their bones that there's an issue. I mean, I'm being facetious, but they'll have a lot of indicators that are a bit harder for, you know, somebody that's kind of fresh out of college and new to the workforce and new to these assets that, you know, wouldn't really have those, that kind of historical knowledge. So that, you know, that's one example. I think, you know, there's also aging assets as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, bigger loads, more dynamic loads on the network, on the infrastructure.
So you don't mention distributed power at all.
Well, I just did
more dynamic loads,
and
okay.
new loads and more dynamic loads. Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's what I intended.
Okay. So that's what you're meaning by that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and Gen Z just isn't capable is what I heard you say.
Exactly. Yeah. Quote me on that.
Yeah. It's on the internet at this point. So let me get your email out there just in case someone wants to email personally.
No, what I'm going to pretend I said was that, Gen Z is used to using technology to do their job, you know, whether it's their homework or, finding a date or, you know, going out to dinner. And they're going to want to take those technologies to work. I think, you know, Brian's got a good example in his past of, you know, where he's, I think your quote, Brian, was something about, you know, we used to go to work to, learn to new technology. Now we have technology at home that we want to bring to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other part of this is, don't think of it just as the Gen Zs, but you also have a lot of contractors that are coming in to do incremental work during outages or overhauls or an outage window. And I think being able to leverage the camera, this technology, as you have the craftsmen that are out there that might be contract workforce with some of the cameras, now you're able to see real time what they're doing, give some of that guidance and assistance as they're doing maintenance or know this is a different location that you should actually be in, as well as in just understanding when someone's in that substation, are they wearing the right PPE? So there's a safety consideration to be given for that as well as a security component, but largely around the safety side of things. So there's a number of different use cases where this would be applied that I wouldn't say it wasn't as applicable 5 years ago. Safety's always been an issue, but I think as you're just seeing a change of the workforce and augmenting with contractors and other folks, some of this information is more widely used. And then with some of the data that you had in the substation, it wasn't being used to actually make operational decisions like we're talking about with asset performance management. So the need to gather that data and to actually use it to make an operational recommendation is becoming, you know, it's increasing, right? And so that's something customers are wanting to do, is how do we leverage the data we're already generating at the most economical way possible?
All right. Yeah, I mean, that's always the trouble with data, right? Big data sets is how do you get how do you ferret through the wheat to the chaff, right? I mean, it's just really, it's hard to do. So this is a newish platform, right? So the platform's been there and you've added new components to the platform from your company. Is it a super crowded space? Because I would argue some of the stories you've told me, there's a number of startups getting into. So what is a utility looking for? Are they looking for a single throat to choke? Is it because it's integrated? Like, what makes this better to buy as a platform is the individual point products? Because, you know, as we're talking, there's certainly companies out there. I can think of folks like Raptor Maps, and I can think of other folks that do some really interesting things with drones and AI. why do I want this in a platform? What's the value prop?
I think what our clients are saying is they want less complexity.
Okay.
So, you know, there are some good, you know, startups with some good technology, very often focused in certain areas and kind of contained in what they can do. I think that what makes us unique is the breadth of capability that we have, you know, the history that we have in the industry. You know, Hitachi Energy has, how many years, Brian, in the industry?
120 years, something like that.
Yeah. So, and I don't mean to be flippant about it. You know, really deep understanding of, you know, transformers and switches and some of the critical security or critical infrastructure that we're talking about. And I think that's really relevant. And, you know, I think it's a combination of the software, the machine learning models, and then the application, you know, like we talked about, how do you determine, you know, what good looks like, what an asset model should look like, what the next best action should look like. That takes a lot of really deep domain knowledge.
So how long does it take to start seeing value from this kind of a program? So, you know, I'd mentioned a baseline because I always find it's hard to know, especially if we're going to talk about degradation or something taking place. Is this something you set up and there's a 6-month window, a 3-month window, or some period of time where you get that substation and say, this is normal behavior. This is, you know, this, how long does it take to learn what's normal for a particular utility?
It depends upon, so we've had some instances where depending upon the health of the asset, when we put some of this in place, it's, you want it to be many years if you're the utility, right? You don't want your mean time between failure to be 6 months. You've got other problems, right? So you want it to be a long time. But there have been instances where we've installed and detected imminent failure on very critical assets inside of a month that the customers were completely unaware of until this happened. So there isn't like a benchmark on that data. It's really depending upon what the health of that asset is. And that's where this, as Phil described, the domain expertise we're bringing, it isn't just the software. We've got a great software group and division, but it's also the operational domain of expertise we're bringing together to really form these solutions. And so when you apply that, then the models are really good. And we've been able to find things that the customers were unaware of that were in imminent danger of failing that would have been a very significant failure for them. And so there's, you hope it is, you know, I'd like to say for me as a vendor, you're going to get payback and ROI in 6 months, right? But then that means that things aren't really good. So I kind of hope it's years in some ways, because that's better operational, you know, health for the customers. But it varies, and it varies very dramatically, even if it's in, depending upon the customer and the location and all their past maintenance activities. So it's a difficult one to put a specific time on.
Yeah, and sorry, but Chris, you alluded to the time it takes to train the machine learning models as well. Yeah. And one of the techniques that we're using is a way to take a limited data set and replicate that for the machine learning models to use.
Like a twin model or?
No, not a twin model. It's essentially a process to create more data. So for example, maybe you have,
So think of a Petri dish and you're kind of growing the virus in a Petri dish.
Exactly. So you may have, you know, 10 images of a transmission tower and you might have, you know, one or two defects that you'd identify there. You could take those 10 images and those defects and create variations on that to help train the model. And so that's a process that's really important to try to get value more quickly versus, you know, having to wait, you know, days or months or years to get a lot of image data.
Now, and how much do you leverage? I mean, some of the samples would be just having a bigger data set. Can you take data from multiple utilities and leverage that? Or is that proprietary and they don't want to share the data? So like if you have images of, I don't know, something that's gone bad over time and you have a large sample set because you've got a large number of customers, it would seem that you could, you know, neutralize it, take the customer identifiable information away, but then you'd be able to still use that same data set. Are you allowed to do that? And your customers
depends
upon
the contract that we have. Yeah. But we like to do that. We think it benefits the whole community. And you know, I think, utilities in some cases are, competitive with each other, but in more cases than not, they're very supportive of each other. So
that's the kind of space they're in.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then what about IoT type things, just sensors and what, how's that playing? And I mean, it would seem that all fits into this strategy very nicely. How's that changing the game?
I mean, we sort of view the camera as the ultimate IoT sensor, right? Okay. I don't think people traditionally thought of it that way, but, you know, a lot of great data comes from cameras. There's a lot of cameras, you know, in the Internet of Things, if you want to call it that. And you know, we feel like these solutions are part of the IoT category.
Okay, so there are not elements then that you'd have of sensors or individual sensors or just cameras that are in the sensor?
No, we have a host of OT data sensors that are coming in, like in a substation or HVDC system, or even inside of a plant where we're feeding it up from those remote locations, all of that sensor data, and then putting that in the cloud, and that feeds our asset performance management system. So we are leveraging a lot of that data as well as part of our IT/OT strategy, and then the cameras are further augmenting as another data set. So there are multiples of that we're leveraging today, and it has changed the game because they're out there producing a lot of data, and these smart devices are generating all this information. And that's, what do we do with it? That's a big question we hear. What do we do with all this stuff? Do we just put in a data lake? I mean, that's really not that useful because it's in one place, but it's still, you still can't find it. You still don't know what it means. What's more valuable than another? And that's where we work with, as Phil said earlier in the conversation, that's where we work with the customers to figure out what exactly they're trying to solve. We have the domain expertise to say, okay, this is more important than that. We can feed this into the model. Here's where you're going to get this outcome. And it's working through that process. So it's not just a cookie cutter, buy a data lake, buy a this, buy a that from us, but it is clearly part of our overall strategy. Just trying to work with the customers where they're at, what specific objectives they're trying to meet now.
So where do you find your customers on their digitalization journey? Where are they, you know, from, let's say, North American utilities generally? How are they scoring on that journey?
That's a really good question. And Phil looked to me to answer it. So I think...
we're both looking at you right now. It's hard to tell on the video, but we're both looking at you.
I think it's one where... there isn't like a standard grade I would give across. I think there are some very progressive utilities that are trying a lot of things. And I think, as you described early on, there's a promise every time somebody says AI or ML, that's going to solve the world, or data lake or something else. And it very seldom realizes the value, right? So it's a lot of, let's throw technology and see what problem I think I can solve. And that's, I think, what Phil was trying to describe and I was trying to describe, is it's more about really understanding the problem that people are facing, and then how could we help them solve it? Not just like, here's a great technology, it's got to have some value. And I think you're seeing the utilities very willing to adapt and adopt different digital strategies in the digital transformation program. I think there's a very concerted effort there. And I think it's one of the top goals as they look into out years, but it's cautious, because there's been so much promise, false promise, I would say, or false hope. And I think that, and a lot of investment that really hasn't realized the benefit. And I think that's, again, why we're trying to take the approach of very discreet, small, not big bang, let's boil the ocean type of scenario with customers.
Yeah, and but I think I was going to say, as a founder of a fintech in energy, I think you're spot on that you can't just be a technologist and help energy, that the institutional knowledge that's required, you just need insider knowledge. And that's why you'll see I've seen a lot of companies coming from the outside that are just technology companies trying to solve a problem they don't understand very well. So I think that's good. And I also agree with you, you know, not boiling the oil or the ocean an analogy, because it really is. If you can solve a point problem, I think from my experience with dealing with industry members, that really does resonate better, and they're more willing to trust you and try that. But you know, when we get into marketing terms, we talk about cloud, or we talk about, you know, blockchain, or we talk about this or that, it usually is a distraction from what the business problem is at hand.
I think the other thing, I agree. I think the other thing is the, you know, the industry, for very good reason, is cautious, right, about trying untested technology.
I think that's a very polite way of saying it's a bit more than conservative. Yes.
Yeah. But in
defense,
continued support of the Gen Z, you know, millennials that I love so
that
dearly.
You trashed earlier. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. they're on the rise, and I think they will change the industry for sure. You know, they're digital natives, and they're going to want this kind of technology to help them do their job.
So I don't disagree with that as well. I guess help me understand a little bit when you say platform. Help me show the elements. You know, you also said we're not trying to do everything, but then you use the word platform. So That's a little inconsistent to me. So what specifically is your platform solving?
So can I take a start at that, Brian?
Go ahead. So no, you did. So
one of the things we recognize is that, software, whether, and I'll throw a couple acronyms out there, whether it's ERP or EAM, and I won't name any vendors, but those kind of solutions that sort of purport to do everything, mm-hmm. are good solutions in a lot of cases. But they're large, monolithic, complex, and costly to implement. Sometimes it takes literally years to implement these systems. And what we're seeing is our clients don't want to spend years implementing systems that may or may not, benefit them. So from a platform perspective, our strategy across both Hitachi Energy and Hitachi Vantara is to have a platform that's integrated with all of those capabilities that can work together, but that is not required to be monolithic in its implementation. So in other words, if there's a component of the platform that you want to use to get value today and implement that independently, you can do that. If you want to implement other pieces of the platform and integrate those or have those pre-integrated, you can do that as well. So that's the platform view is trying to accomplish two things, make it seamless in terms of its integration, but also make it focused in terms of its application.
Okay. So it's kind of modern tech stack, right? You have APIs come in. If you want to pick a best of breed element, it's going to work with your stuff. If you want to use the whole thing because it's already integrated and easy for you, you go to the easy button, right?
Yeah.
That's what I hear you saying. I have mentioned North America quite a bit. So globally, what's the demand for this kind of a solution? Is this a problem everywhere? I'm obviously coming in from Europe here, so I'm...
You don't have these problems in Europe, do you?
No, obviously not. Yeah.
No, I think it's very much a problem in the rest of the world, right? And you just see the maturity and adoption in different parts of the world is, in some spots, Europe is further advanced. So some of the DSOs or TSOs are thinking about this in a more aggressive term. So I don't think there's anyone who says it's not important. It's just the adoption cycle is a little bit different. So we're talking to our customers all over the globe about these solutions. And some you're doing a little more education and informative because they haven't ever deployed. Some of these are very in the beginning stages of their digitalization journey. And others are, we've been there, done that, and very skeptical. Show me how this is actually going to work because I've been burned before. And that's always fun when you get to the contract negotiation, someone who's been burned by someone else. But that's where we're at. And I think just to add to what Phil said, I wouldn't think platform usually means, hey, build whatever you want on it, just buy some and consume it. And that's not at all what we're doing. This is a portfolio, if we will, of products that, as Phil said, we can compose them to augment what somebody needs today. So it's very much around going time to value for the customer, total cost of ownership, not making them rip and replace a bunch of things they have just to get one incremental capability. And that's why it's that term platform somewhat used, but it's more of a portfolio that we can compose it to be a full, let's say, whatever you want it to be, or it can be something that's a subset of, just depending on where you're at, because we realize customers, I've been a customer, I've worked at utility for 7 years. You don't want to just spend money just frivolously, especially in IT, right? Who wants to spend money there? I'd rather buy more transformers or more, work on retube the boiler, whatever. But it's how do we give them the lowest total cost of ownership? Don't have to throw away products that are working for them, but yet augment to give them the capabilities they need today. That's really what we're trying to build here.
All right. So just before you go, so this is probably a silly question. Who's the they? So we're saying utilities. We've got this broad brushing. You mentioned IT in that. Who listening to this podcast should be talking to you guys?
The business.
It's
a specific part.
Yeah. You're seeing, I think, the CIOs or chief digital officers. There's still some that have chief digital officers. They are there to really enable a lot of the business, right? And to understand the business and to help the business. So I think the CIO side, oftentimes, and I played a business unit CIO role for a while at a utility, so I understand that they don't carry a lot of credit always, but it's understanding those operational issues and being able to talk in operational terms to their operational colleagues, because that's the core business, right? Generating usually and transmitting, distributing power. And that's what they're trying to do. So I think those people are the ones that we are would be most interested in talking to is either those, the CIO side, the IT side, or the business side. But there's usually, they always have to come together when they're making these kind of decisions.
Okay. So, you both agreed on the business. So I didn't get any conflict there. So that's good news. One thing kind of my technology background that comes up. So is this near real time? And then, you know, we talk about getting a lot of data in, right? You know, if you're looking at video, that's a lot of data. And if you're talking, you know, a large asset or a large portfolio, or, you know, that seems like quite a bit. So how does that scale and work in, you know, and how quickly am I getting this actionable intelligence, right? I mean, you know, I've got a camera on some analog gauge and it's going up, or I suddenly see my substation and it's turning red in the, you know, in the temperature. How quickly am I getting this?
In terms of the speed of getting the insights, it really depends upon the use case and the need, right? So we can try to make everything real time, but it's not always necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're doing a,
you're answering my question. That's what I was wondering.
So it's what's necessary, right? If you're doing a drone inspection on you know, transmission lines, you don't necessarily need to read that in real time. You're only going to fly the drone, you know, maybe every 6 months or 12 months anyway, right? So if you can get that analysis done in a couple of days instead of, you know, weeks or months, then that's an improvement. But it doesn't need to be, you know, minutes or even hours. On the other hand, you know, if you have cameras in your substations, why not identify the issue as soon as you see it? You know, if there's an anomaly, you know, it could be real time.
All right. So we've talked a lot about product. We've talked a lot about your company. Do you guys have any use stories or anyone you can share, like a big win or something that you saw or something like that? That would be interesting to our audience.
No.
That's been a great show.
Thanks for coming.
Would you be willing to share? Again?
Of course we do.
Well, let's talk about how this makes a difference.
I hope you're editing this.
I can't edit that part.
I'm counting on a lot of energy here.
That's fine.
Especially with all the people coming in and out.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of banging going on here. But yeah, let's talk through like a couple stories, right? Let's talk about value creation from a user point of view of the problem statement that they saw. So whether it was, you know, an asset being bad, or whether it's a trend or some historical knowledge, whatever kind of win you want to share.
Do you want to start, Brian?
Yeah, I would say it's going to be difficult to say something about vegetation management, some of the other ones, because they're new. We don't have any customers yet. But I can talk about, you know, a good customer win. I probably won't use their name just for sake of anonymity. But from an asset performance management perspective, there was a real instance where we had a major utility that installed the system, was completely unaware on a major substation that they were in early stages, mid late stages of failure. And then within a few weeks of installing the system, they identified two such failures and prevented a massive outage because of it. And they were then immediately convinced that this was not only a great product, but something that they wanted to deploy across the broader set of their fleet. So it was that overcoming that skepticism was always, that's why we started using a smaller set of assets we were deploying it on. But then when those immediate results, which unfortunate or fortunate, depending upon your perspective, it caused them to say, we need to apply this on a broader asset set. So we have seen those real benefits in a short period of time.
Cool. Do you want to share a story?
Sure. I mean, a lot of what we're talking about is technology that we're taking from other industries and applying it to the utility industry. We do have pilots in all instances, including veg management, that we're working with clients on. So, you know, we are working with clients today. The image analytics that we do in the substation, where we place cameras and then look for, you know, anomalies or health and safety or security issues, we do that today. And like I said, in other industries, you know, a great example is a major U.S. metro uses that in their light rail. So we have these cameras in all their light rail and an operations center that can look at all the imagery and identify, you know, a whole host of different anomalies.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we're getting towards the end of our interview here. So my question is we've gone through a pretty big value chain, right?
Yeah.
We've talked about many different things you can do specific to these linear assets. We talked specifically about using video and using artificial intelligence, machine learning, to really do something actionable with it and creating data. So help me pull this together for our audience. You know, we've been kind of in a wild journey. It's just been kind of random questions based on what we sure. say.
Yeah.
But let's pull this together in a meaningful way.
So you asked where are we seeing the industry? Where are we seeing our clients on this journey? And Brian said really, it depends, which is the truth. I think for us, it's about meeting our clients where they are on that journey and helping them to get to the next step. So I don't know that I can give you, a pat answer in terms of, where do we start or, what's the first or next step. It really depends upon where our clients are and what outcomes they're looking to achieve. So we do a lot of, what we do is, a lot of listening, a lot of trying to understand, where they're at, what their challenges are, what they're trying to accomplish, and then making some specific recommendations based on what we hear.
All right. And Brian, from you,
I would say Phil's exactly spot on, right? It's a lot of our customers that we talk to either think they have too much or too little or poor quality of data information to be able to leverage this. And in most cases, we're able to do more than what they thought they could with their data in a quicker time fashion. So I think it's not, don't worry about what the condition is or what you think your limitations are. It's worth a conversation. Let's see what we can do. And let's focus it on a specific area that you're really targeting for this year. And let's see what we can do together. I think they have more than what they realize they do and have better quality than what a lot of our customers believe they have from a data set.
So I get all that, but you send a red flag up when I hear that. So I'm going to ask a question. So is this a professional services engagement, or is this a platform where there's just standardized APIs and well-known things that you're basically saying, look, I've got a toolbox here and I'm just going to look at my toolbox and you need a screwdriver and you need a hammer because you described a problem set that needs those things, or are you building them something?
No, I would say it's the latter. We have the toolbox. We have the tools there in the tool chest. It's more of the conversation to understand, because that's a lot of people show up with a hammer and you've got screws and they're like, use the hammer, dude. It'll knock it in. I got a great hammer here. And that's really not the
case. Works every time, by the way.
Yeah, that's exactly what Phil's describing is, we're not trying to sell a hammer or a screwdriver, but the conversation isn't, we're going to build you something. It's more of how best do we take the products we already have and then apply it to what you're trying to do. And if there's a case where perhaps it isn't a good fit for whatever reason, we'll say that, right? We're not trying to just drive something. We really want to understand where the customers are at and give them value. That's really what we're trying to do.
Well, I think it goes back to the discussion too about, we're not asking our clients to, rip out what they have and put in what we have. We're trying to understand what their challenges are and solve those problems.
That's right.
Well, awesome. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us on the podcast. We've gone a little bit about what the industry done. We've gone a little bit into your software. I hope our audience is wiser after spending 45 minutes with us today. Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
And for our audience, you spent another hour listening to Insider's Guide to Energy. We look forward to talking to you again next week. Bye-bye.